Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Book Talk with Lawrence J. King. From coast to coast, across the nation, Lawrence is an internationally known six-time published author. Book Talk highlights published authors from the local, regional, national, and international scene, as well as showcasing musicians and people of interest in a positive and productive way. Give a rockin' warm welcome to your host, Lawrence J. King.
All right. This is Lawrence J. King in the house. And today it is our privilege to have with us M.D. Nunes. He is an author extraordinaire, award-winning novelist, and his writing style speaks to people from all walks of life. Thus, his book should soar into the realm of best-selling books nation and worldwide. We'll be talking about his book and talking about his life in general, what he's got going on, and things of that nature. So without further ado, let's bring him on our show and get with Mr. Nunes and talk to him about what's going on in his life. Hello, you with us there, MD? Welcome to Book Talk Radio. How you doing today?
Lawrence, can you hear me?
I can hear you very well, thank you. Hi, thank you.
Thank you for the very kind words of introduction.
Oh, yeah, I can see it now. And how did this all start for you? Where were you born? How'd you grow up? All that stuff leading up to the current day.
Oh, my gosh, you're going back a long time. I was actually born way back east. I was born in Syracuse, New York, but I was raised in Colorado. And I've spent the second half of my life here in Southern California, in the San Diego area. Been a kind of a trek going from east to west, and quite frankly, I don't know if I'll ever move away from Southern California. Kind of enjoy having a perpetual sunshine, you know?
I heard that. So did you have any experiences growing up writing or things of that nature?
You know, I always loved writing. Writing is something that... even when I was in school, I enjoyed as long as it was for pleasure, kind of one of those maybe a little bit rebellious in school trying to write. But quite frankly, I enjoyed it a ton. And in my professional career, I worked for a technical company for 4 decades. And communication was just part of the job. You know, you just had to do that. It's kind of one of those things that's a requirement for maybe all walks of our life. But I loved that. Probably the only difference there is people read what I wrote there because we had to communicate. When I start to write novels, I'm trying to write these not only to communicate something of value, but I'm also trying to make sure it's truly fun and enjoyable, something that people really want to get their hands on.
I understand. So what prompted you to want to write this particular book, Nails?
Well, Nails is if you look at the world that we have today, we have a ton of truly political challenges going on. I would say political world challenges, and it struck me as how much of what we're going through in this world is driven by this seductive thing that we call power. Power and the trying to get the wealth that comes with that and the fame. And I was thought that this was maybe a case here that has some very significant parallels back into the early 30s of last century, where essentially people were seduced by those people in powerful power to go ahead and do some really bad things. And so in Nails, Nails has three very, very different characters in the context of socio background, economic backgrounds, where they started from in their livelihoods. Essentially, these are people who were very, very different, but they all have one common thread, and that is they all were seduced into doing some really bad things for the sake of power or wealth or recognition. And so the concept of Nails here is how many of these people actually thought they were hammers of society, only to find out that there's always someone there that's a little bit bigger than them that is truly the hammer. And so they become nothing more than nails, essentially nothing more than tools for those other individuals. And so that's kind of the genesis of the story. It's a very dark novel. I think it's extremely fast-paced, and I think the structure is a little different. It was a little bit of an experiment relative to this. I had three characters, three separate sections of the book to develop each one of them.
I see. Who are some of your literary influences?
Oh, this is a tough one. There are a ton of individuals out there that I think are really, really fun. Yeah, and actually served as and still serve as challenges to me to aspire to. I don't really have a single individual or single style that I can point to, but let me give you a couple examples of the writing that I love today and have always loved. Hemingway, I love this guy. His storytelling, obviously a long time ago, but his storytelling has no wasted words. I just love how quickly paced his stories are, and the pace of that and the salience of the stories are just incredible on Hemingway. There's a guy by the name of Robert Penn Warren. Some of you folks, some of your listeners won't remember him, but he wrote a book a long time ago called All the King's Men. It was then turned into a movie. But the point of view, narration that he used for this and the dialogue were tremendous. I mean, it was just you kind of felt you could actually feel yourself in the characters that he had. Then I had, someone like Ray Bradbury for Dandelion Wine. Kind of pulls you into a time long ago where it's a feeling of comfort in that respect. But the pace and the pulse of his writing just keep you going. And perhaps more contemporary standpoint is a guy by the name of Almer Towles, which you probably are very familiar with. I love his creativity on the structure of how he does his stories. And the one thing about his stories is they never pause. So you never feel yourself wanting to put the book down. It draws you in there, and you never want to stop turning the pages. So it kind of gives you a little bit of an example. I assume that you probably have similar examples like that.
Absolutely. So would you say your writing style is direct and to the point, or you create visions of things leading up to the point?
Well, I think it's both. I do try to keep the style pretty brief and short, mainly because I don't like to bore the reader. Now, I will tell you that I do think there's one book right now, by the way, sitting at the publisher waiting to go as a next step. That book actually has a case here where I have had to be a little bit more indirect because I think that the story itself requires some pausing for the reader to consider what's being said. The book that you were talking about, Nails, I think is very direct. It's extremely fast-paced. I broke the book into three separate sections so I could focus on the development of each one of those characters without confusing anybody from the reader standpoint. They could keep themselves completely engrossed in that, very direct in that concept. And it gave me an opportunity because of the pace that I could pause occasionally during that storytelling to maybe give some really good pictorial descriptions and something that really allow the person to draw you guys into the story itself without belaboring it and without pausing and without being tedious, so to speak. So I do think I use both aspects of that. They're both pretty critical, I think.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I'm a 10-time published author myself, and I use it pretty much a direct approach. I don't play with the toes. I go right for the throat. And it seems to do well. You know, it's like you can envision a lot of things and make them come to life, but I like to just, put it right there. You know, there's a tree and a screen, and let's move on to the creek. And, not that, well, it took 2 hours to walk to this beautiful tree that had blossoming. I'm not that way. But, yeah, everybody's got a different style about it. And speaking of style, every author has a process when it comes to writing. So what is the MD process?
Oh, that's kind of an embarrassing question for me. The reason why I would say that is I'm probably most of you guys who are really very, very serious and successful writers like yourself would probably perceive me as being somewhat undisciplined. And what I mean by that my process starts out with just kind of jotting down just some basic ideas and potential stories as they kind of come to me. I include some in that process. I'll come up with some really super high level, very basic plot and conflicts that I think might be interesting to that story. And it's only when I get kind of serious about that I start to draft a real rough outline, something, you know, just to enable me to break the story into pieces and to see if the idea still seems compelling. At that point, by the way, none of that is an extremely highly invested thing. You know, I know of some writers who are really, really critical on their outlining process prior to that. In my case, these are really, really quick jotting down of ideas. And then I'll just write the first 10 or 20 pages. I jump into it that way just to kind of get the creative juices flowing and to see if I like the pace. And I will give that initial writing to my wife and my daughter for their first one through. I use them as a great sounding board because, first off, they have no problems telling me when something is just not good or if they think that something is just, you know, something that compels them to want to read more and they want me to go ahead and sit down and start some more. And by the way, if those first 10 or 20 pages aren't interesting to them, it's time for me to trash and rethink the entire overall idea. Some cases I just throw the idea away because it's not in me to make a difference. Other times it just gives me that little kick in the tail to really start something that truly is creative at this point. You might consider that, you know, when you might ask me, how many of these ideas actually get trashed? I would say a lot of them. But at any time, I have 5 or 10 of these story ideas in my head moving forward. When it comes down to the writing, I try not to get too carried away with the words at this point. Again, we're looking at a super rough draft, and that's just to get me to the point of rewriting. And unlike most writers, I think that I would tell you that my rewriting is my most favorite part of the whole process. It's at the time when I actually sit in my office and lock myself in the office and I actually read the book out loud. I know that sounds silly. It's like, why are you reading your own work? But I find that process lets me get into the minds of my characters when I actually hear it and actually read it in a pace that is like a dialogue. And a lot of my style is dialogue, by the way. And that'll get me to a point here where a significant amount of rewriting does occur. The next part of the process, I'll turn it over to some very, very trusted, a few very trusted, what I call alpha readers, for their comments prior to me sending it to my publisher. And I say that's my least comfortable because that's a case where I've invested a lot of work into the book at that time. I have to recognize that with my alpha readers, some of them are going to like the stories, some of them are going to hate the stories, depending on what their like and dislikes are. And it's hard to get feedback that they don't like it, but in some cases it has to be. So that's kind of where I go.
I understand. So do you create your characters from scratch, or do you know these characters and give them a fictitious name or whatever?
Well, I'll tell you what, in Countenance of Man, that was the book that's been out for some period of time. I actually had one or two models of folks that I was using to help me with the characters on that. Not all of them. Most of the characters in that book were completely fictional, but a couple of them were really people who had impacts in my life that I used them as a model, so to speak. In Nails, absolutely 100% fictional at that point. These are people that closed my eyes, and I write in the first person to try to imagine what this individual would say, what that person would be like. The book that's coming out next will be called My Brother's Keeper, and that likewise, that is strictly made-up characters, completely fictional. A little sleeper alert, though, by the way, is a couple characters in every book have ties into the next book. That's just my fun way of kind of tying all the stories, providing some sort of tie between the stories, not from the storyline perspective in any way, shape, or form, but a familial line.
I see. So when you're not writing, how do you spend your downtime?
Well, downtime is kind of a funny thing. I actually like to read or like to write in my downtime. It's kind of become a passion of mine that I just really enjoy it, and it's actually a way to relax and unwind. However, in my downtime, I don't write on a specific book. I make a point to write articles that are related to research that I've done, maybe articles related to my faith or articles related to some specific contemporary issue that's hitting the news, or I'll just take a crack at poetry. A lot of these articles I may not even publish, or I may not even put them out and share them with anyone, but it's mainly just it's fun for me to exercise. It's the mind and the writing styles, and it's fun to learn something about something different. Now, if I'm not writing, I have a number of things to keep my busy. So when I put the pen and paper down, or I turn the PC off, then it's time for me to read other people's work. Well, I play the cello. By the way, I play out here in Southern California. We have a thing called the Poway Symphony, which is out of the North San Diego County. I play with them. I play the cello with them. I also play music with a quartet of friends of mine that play predominantly folk music. Love the golf, and quite frankly, I just love to spend time with my wife and my friends. It's a very, very supportive environment in that respect, and wouldn't trade it for anything.
Nice. So tell us about your most recent work, Mills. Let's get into that just a bit and, pique the interest of these listeners and my friends, fans, followers, and listeners.
Okay, great. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk a little bit about Nails. I think I mentioned to you that Nails is a dark story. Okay, so for those people who are faint of heart, you probably don't want to buy this book. But if you enjoy something that makes you think and maybe sometimes makes you shiver at night, hey, it's a book for you. I'm not saying that's like a paranormal book or something like that, but it's a book that is – there's enough that are based on things that you see every day that it ought to make you think, okay? So I think Nails is this wake-up call to everyone who enjoys their freedom, regardless of the political leaning. So it's not a right-wing or a left-wing one. It is a story about seduction, and I'm not talking about a sexual kind, but that of power. It's intended to show how easily we are manipulated by those in power and how seductive it is to solicit and to want that power. I do think it's something that almost everybody on your listener, Lawrence, can relate to. In that respect, I think they'll get a kick out of it. By the way, it's a real fast read, okay? It's only 86,000-87,000 words, and it is the pace of the writing that was intended from my standpoint is to make this thing extremely fast paced. In Nails, you're going to be introduced to three really different characters. These guys are you'll see them on the book. One of them is a local gangbanger. One of them is a news anchor, and one of them is a government employee, a high-level government employee. But all of these folks all have hooks into a desire or a desire to go ahead and be something bigger than they currently are. Their thirst of power drives everything they do, and they kind of get thrown together into these as unlikely accomplices in a larger effort to seize and consolidate the power structures of the world. And it's a dive into that dark part of human nature that drives us always to want more than we have. And in this case, the characters they think that they're seduced into this idea of having power over you and me, and they find out that quite frankly, they're just like you and me. So when they abuse those below them. Likewise, they end up getting abused themselves. It is a story that is maybe it's an old story that's been repeated a lot of times because in real life, not in books, but in real life, But I think people will find it exciting. For those people, for your listeners that, by the way, that have an interest in World War II history or, you know, fascism movements of the mid to early 30s, I think you'll find this an extremely, extremely exciting and probably frightening book.
Absolutely. In your professional opinion, what would you say would be the number one top reason? Would it be greed, money, that causes these people to want more or, you know, strive to be more than they are?
You know, I think money is a huge driver to anybody to a point. I think once you get to the point here where you have enough money that you can buy what you want and those types of things, I think money ceases to become as critical of a driver. But I think something that extends beyond that and is always will be a driver for all of us is that of power. And I'm not talking about power of being a CEO of a company versus a regular employee. I'm talking about power over individuals. And I don't think it ever – I think that if you achieve a level of power, people want more. It's one of these things that you can never – that their appetite is never satiated and so or sated. And I think that that is just kind of one of those things that I don't know if it's human nature that we always have to combat, but I think it's something that is – you see it prevalent in politics. You see it prevalent in business. You see it prevalent in entertainment, is that ability of control over others, and the control and the recognition that comes with that.
Absolutely. So projects are you working on now?
The projects I'm looking at in the future. Well, okay. There's a number of them. I think, right now we're in the process of doing book cover design and, editing on a work called My Brother's Keeper. My Brother's Keeper is a, radically different story from the ones that I've done in the past, but it is a kind of a psychological thriller that I think people are going to get a kick out of, and it does have, it comes with a pretty significant twist at the end. That one right now my publisher is looking at. They're excited about it, and hopefully we'll see that thing very soon coming out to, you know, on Amazon and to some bookstores here that you'll be able to pick that puppy up. It's a quick read. You're going to look at something that is not it's not a War and Peace type length. It's a book that'll, you know, be 300 pages. That'll be a really fun read. One that you're going to want to put in your backpack or your briefcase or download to your iPad to go ahead and read. And it'll be a fun one on that. As I said, it's a psychological thriller, and so in that respect, you're going to want to kind of read it close because it made it a real challenge to write to make sure that this plot all works and I think you'll find that the characters that you may hate when you start, you'll fall in love with them by the end. The one right behind that is a book that's actually based in World War I, but it's not what I would call an historical fiction book. World War I in this book will just be essentially a backdrop for a more a story about an individual that has a huge amount of guilt relative to losing a son, and another individual who has a huge amount of guilt for leaving his son and losing his wife. And they just happen to – the war provides an opportunity for them to meet each other. And the war provides a backdrop and the scenario for it. So those are the two works that I think that you guys will your readers will get a kick out of very soon. And oh, by the way, there is a sequel coming out for Nails. The feedback on Nails has been good. I purposely started that book out with a couple characters that you might find as intriguing and want to know what happens to them after this. So even though that Nails ends in a very has a great closure to it, I think you're going to find that you want to get to know some more about one of the characters. That particular character will be the center point of a sequel coming out that will be called I'm tentatively calling it the Bent Nail, and that means impossible to hammer, right? Because you can never hammer a bent nail. But we'll see how that one comes out. Like I say, I'm about a fifth of the way through the book in the rough draft form. So it's got a ways to go, but I'm enjoying it more and more every day.
I understand. So where can our listening audience pick up copies of your book, get in touch with you with questions, comments, or concerns? You know, just plug all that information, if you will.
Oh, well, at any time. My publisher is Crimson Cloak Publisher. They do have a website out that you can hook into. They have a broad range of authors, by the way. I'm probably their primary author from the standpoint of adult fiction, adult novels, and I think you get a kick out of but the other stuff that they have is truly, truly exceptional. So you can certainly get a hold of my publisher. My publisher can get a hold of me through their website. But I also maintain a separate website called mdnews.com, and you can access that and click on my links, and we'll make it to access the books. You can get it through there, and it'll link you either to Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com or Amazon to purchase the book, the books. And either one of those will be fine. Plus, they give you an opportunity to connect to me directly if you desire at that point. I will give you an email also if you have comments that you don't want to be made public but you'd love to get a hold of me directly. It's mdnews@gmail.com. And please don't hesitate to send me a note. I get a number of emails a day, and so sometimes it takes me a while to get back to you, but I promise I will make every effort I can to get back to you.
Perfect. So where do you get your ideas about what to write?
Oh, they come from a lot of places. I don't limit myself to a particular genre or a particular subject matter. I think life provides us enough wonderful opportunities to come up with really, really interesting things to write about. So the only thing I'm going to tell you is that from a limiter standpoint, is any story, I think, has to have something that's worthwhile saying and has to be able to be said in a way that is compelling and exciting for a reader. I think if you strike out on either one of those things, it's like, why bother, right? So most of my stuff, I look at it from the perspective as does it bring a question, does it bring an answer, does it bring an aha that would be really good for the other people that will enjoy that. I talked about the 5 to 10 ideas that I always have in process. To give you an example, one of those came from a very, very simplistic image that I saw when I was visiting Texas recently. I saw a grandmother with a young child. They were playing in a lake. They both had their pant legs rolled up, and they were bent over looking at the fish. And I was like, oh, my gosh, this is what a wonderful concept and what a wonderful point here of two individuals, two generations apart, taking in complete enjoyment in exactly the same thing in a very fresh way. So that book, that may end up showing up eventually, tentatively something like thinking maybe even the name of Fishing Lessons for that puppy. But that'd be that itself can look at a lifelong story that tells essentially a slice of life story that might be very, very interesting to some people that are wrestling with family ties, familial ties, and perhaps aging.
Huh. What a concept. How do you know if what you have written is good?
Well, I'll tell you what. One of the nice things about, first off, is developing you probably have the same thing. You have I'm sure you have a stable of readers that you can trust, okay? They have no qualms about telling you that your work is either good or bad. And I'm lucky enough and blessed to have some folks that are like that. And that's part of what I look at is I do have individuals I look at from a third-party standpoint to make sure they do indeed, have an opportunity to read, but also an opportunity to give me feedback to see if they like it or not. The other aspect of that, though, is I'll tell you, I'm a pretty tough reader myself. I mentioned to you that I read all my stuff out loud in the rewrite phase. And that's helps me from a pace standpoint, and all from the standpoint of I get a different perspective on my own writing that way. And it's real easy to see whether or not do I like it or not at that point. And it's easier I find it very easy for me to separate myself from being the writer and as just to essentially being a reader at that juncture. Now, I don't necessarily look at my writing as being good or bad based on just how many books did I sell. I mean, obviously, that's a great process performance measure, you might say, if you go back into the technical world. But my real thing here is, am I saying something that's exciting? So your readers giving me feedback will give me a great idea whether or not it's good or bad. Your comments that you made when we first started out this conversation give me a really good idea of whether or not people perceive it as good or bad. And so that's more what I'm looking for.
I understand.
By the way, if you have any suggestions on that, if your listeners have any suggestions on that, I would love to hear it, because I'll be glad to incorporate that into my judgment on this too.
Absolutely. What does a good day of writing look like for you?
Oh, well, I told you I'm probably not the most disciplined writer in the world. But I do find that it is important to have a structure. Okay, so in this case, I do a structure. When I get up in the morning, I will tell you I'm an avid reader and I'm an avid news watcher, and so I will get up, I'll watch some news on the TV, but then I'll also will read something like for The Economist for a period of time. Get my couple cups of coffee, and then I will disappear into the office and write. And my idea of writing is I'm probably good for about 4 hours of writing. I find myself that after about 4 hours, if I continue on after that, I end up discarding a lot of that the next day just because it's not as creative as I would like it to be. But then after about in those 4 hours, that 4 hour segment, by the way, starts out with typically me rereading what I did the previous day or two, just to make sure the pulse is the same. I'll jump into writing, and if I can get it between 2,000 and 3,000 words, that is an exceptional day for me. I'm probably slower than some of some of the other authors that you've had on there. But the pulse that I have on it is really about, since so much of mine is dialogue and that type of conscious writing, it all needs to flow together. And so that's the reason why I try to limit it in that respect, and also always pull in the day's work before to the day after. Now, once the 4 hours is done, even if I'm on a roll anymore, I'll stop. I stop and I'll do something different, whether that be writing some of these little articles I was talking about, whether that be practicing my musical instruments, or whether that means going out to the golf course. I literally stop no matter what to go ahead and give the brain a break. And that's what a successful day of writing looks like for me. Sometimes, like I say, sometimes it'll be 1,000 words, sometimes it'll be 2,000 to 3,000 words. I very rarely get more than 3,000 words, and even if I'm having a writer's block where I'm just not making progress, I'll still get it out for the 4 hours.
Focus and discipline sounds like a plan. So
how do you
define success when you're writing?
Oh, so success in writing. I think at this point, you know, at one time in my life, I would have defined success in writing as being published, okay? And but that's happened, and it's like, you know what? That felt really good, and you know, it kind of makes you proud of yourself and all those things. But realistically, I think today what is most important to me from a success standpoint would be making my publisher extremely successful. My publisher's young, my publisher's small. I want to be part of their success model. I want to be one of those things that I want to be one of those writers that they roll up to and they say, you know what, Matt helped, MD helped us make this our business successful. And I want to be something that really generates some market interest, not only for myself, but also for them. So I think that that's really what I would look at right now. You know, I spent a career being a successful executive for a high-tech company, and I got a lot of folks who have known me and those types, and that was extremely fulfilling. Today, fame isn't that important to me as much as saying something that people at the end of the day, they call me up or they write me a note and they say thank you. We really appreciate it. That's truly my definition of success now.
Amazing. The name R. Travis Short comes to mind. Who is that guy?
So Travis is my publicist. Travis is a real, he's been a wonderful guy. He kind of keeps me on the straight and narrow. His commentary to me has always been, you know, Matt, he says, you're not out here trying to sell books. We're out here trying to make sure that people get access to what you've written. And that's really what we're trying to do. We're not trying to, he's not out there trying to push me from the standpoint of selling something. He's really just essentially trying to push me to essentially be me. And I really appreciate what Travis has done for me.
The founder of Phoenix Publicity Promotions and Public Relations. Yes.
Yes.
So let's plug your books one more time where people can get that. And then we'll be saying adios for the day because I got a little person in my ear going, you're overdue. All right, let's do that.
So, Matt Newth, MD Newth, 2 books right now that you can get access to. One of them is one of them is Nails. Look for it on Amazon. The other one, Countenance of Man, but Nails is the one I think you guys want to take a look at today and look for the books in the future, My Brother's Keeper. Enjoy them, folks. I appreciate it. And Lawrence, thank you so much for your time.
Awesome. You've been a very amazing guest, and we look forward to having you back on our show when you come out with your next book and your next book and your next book. And with that being said, you have a wonderful evening, and tell Travis I said hello.
Thank you, Lawrence. You too. Good night, guys. Bye-bye.
Good night. Thank you. All right, this is Lawrence J. King out of the house. And with that being said, yeah, get out there and get a copy of MD News Nails. He's got it going on. He's a good guy, I can tell. And he speaks to all walks of life. So that's going to be an awesome read and well worth your time and money. So with that being said, tune in next time when you hear me say Lawrence J. King, Book Talk Radio. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Good night.